Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. We're so glad to have you with us here this evening on Ask Herbal Health Expert Susan Weed, a two-hour radio show each Tuesday night. Herbal medicine is people's medicine, simple, safe, effective. Please bring your curiosity and health questions. Susan will enlighten, surprise, and delight you. I know most of you know Susan Weed already. She's my mom, so I know her. But for those of you who have not yet met Susan, I'd like to share. She is the author of the Wise Woman Herbal series, five wonderful books on women's health and herbal medicine, including Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, Breast Cancer, Breast Health! The Wise Woman Way, Healing Wise, The Wise Woman Herbal, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, and Susan's latest book, Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way. In addition to being the editor at Ash Tree Publishing and writing her books, Susan is the director of the Wise Woman Center in Woodstock, New York. The Wise Woman Center is open to the public on appointment-only basis. She offers weekend workshops, intensives, and apprenticeships throughout the season. Susan is also available to you online via wisewomanmentor.com. There you can go and view her weekly e-zine. You can subscribe to receive a notification via email each week, or you could join her mentorship program. Susan also offers distance learning correspondence courses and online courses at the Wise Woman University. But you can also just go to her website, susanweed.com, where you will find thousands of pages online with recipes, articles, art features, and so much more. Well, for now, let's see what Susan has to share with us this evening. Thank you, and welcome, Susan.
Thank you, Justine, and welcome, everyone, to another Tuesday night. Indeed, here we are just past equinox, and I look out the window, and there's still light in the sky. There's only going to be more and more of that as we turn around the sun heading toward summer solstice. How's the spring equinox your way, Rebecca?
Yeah, it's great. We've been very busy this spring because we're moving and just keeping up with a 3.5-year-old and being pregnant and everything has kept us quite busy over here. So, but I'm glad to have the extra light and the extra energy of all the plants around me because here our spring has really taken off.
All right. Well, thank you for making time to be our moderator for the Blog Talk Show and for the teleseminars and for the online teleclasses as well. We really appreciate you as the moderator, an important part of the Wise Woman web as we reweave the healing cloak of the ancients and restore herbal medicine as people's medicine. You're an important part, and you are too, listeners, really important part of what we're doing here. This is not about the elite. It's for everybody. And remember that I got my start as welfare mom. You know, single mom out there with not much money, and this really helped me maximize my health care dollars. I was teaching at a conference once, and a woman in class got up, raised her hand and said, you know, it just sounds like la-la land what you're talking about here, you know, eating wild salads and drinking nourishing herbal infusions. She said, my clientele is like welfare mothers, and they don't have time to do these things. I was very blessed that another woman did, in fact, stand up, and she looked at this MD, and she said, I'm a welfare mother of 5 children, and if we didn't go out and pick wild salads and use herbal medicine, I don't think we would make it. So, you know.
Yeah, it amazes me how much you can come back from the forest with in one day. I'm just like, I love it.
And it's so wonderful for the children.
Oh, yeah. I feel like every time I'm in the forest harvesting food and I'm with my child, I'm like, women have been doing this forever. And it just brings me back to, it keeps me really grounded and happy. It makes my child is so happy out in the forest, too, and it's really great.
Right, and you don't have to watch out for cars, watch out for, no. They can, wander a bit and play and I always say, if you give a child a pill from a bottle, then you teach the child to honor the bottle. And if you give a child a plant from the earth, you teach the child to honor the earth.
I'm blessed I've never had to give my child a pill from a bottle. So.
Well, some people do it every day. They call it vitamins.
Yeah. Right. Thank my lucky stars that I came upon you in my early life before I had children.
Now, speaking of great diets, this week's e-zine is wonderful. I've had this article around for a few years. I think the study was done in 2010. It was a group of Dutch researchers, and they were annoyed at how many people in westernized countries were being put on blood pressure drugs and statin drugs. And so they looked at over 44 different studies of heart health, longevity, and food consumption to see if there were any foods that were positively connected to living longer. And in fact, they were able to identify 6 key foods. And they say that if these key foods are in your diet on a daily basis, and let me moderate that because, you don't have to, necessarily eat them every single day, but they kind of say a daily basis so you get the idea that it's really regular, not just, once in a while, that men will extend their lifespan by 6.5 years and women will extend their lifespan by 5 years, and that there will be no need to take low-dose aspirin, statin drugs, or blood pressure-lowering drugs. Now, you might be thinking, these are just going to be awful, terrible, nasty, awful foods, and you could not be further from the truth. These are wonderful, delicious foods that you would be thrilled to eat. 3.5 ounces of dark chocolate, a 5-ounce glass of wine, or a cup of green tea, a handful of almonds, which is about 2.5 ounces, 4 ounces of salmon, herring, or other fish containing omega-3 fatty acids, 2 cups of fruits and vegetables, especially leafy greens, and guess what, gang? Drinking your nourishing herbal infusion counts toward part of that, and 1/2 teaspoon fresh garlic. It's certainly not the only thing that they're suggesting you eat. They're not saying that nothing else is worthwhile, but they're saying those are 6 key foods for longevity and heart health. How fun. Do we have any callers?
Yeah, we have a couple callers waiting. And we have Gina Lake joining us at 9 p.m. tonight.
Yes, she looks quite interesting. Spiritual teacher and the author of 12 books. Woo! She's a gifted intuitive, and we're going to find out about being present. What does it mean to be present when we talk to Gina tonight?
Sounds great. So I'm going to open the line up to the first caller in the 770 area code.
Hi. My name is Barry. I'm 20 years old. And I have excess hair on my stomach, a little on my chest, and a little growing above my upper lip and chin. Do you have any suggestions for addressing this issue? Oh, My mom was recently diagnosed with positive receptor breast cancer and said she was younger. She also had the same issues as well. So do you think it's being passed on, or what is your thought about it?
Women vary greatly in the amount of hair that they have on their bodies, as do men. However, our culture kind of puts out that women shouldn't have hair on their bodies, and women are encouraged to shave the hair from their legs and shave the hair from under their arms. So I don't find anything unusual, strange, or really problematic about the fact that the hair is growing there, nor does it have anything to do with her diagnosis of breast cancer. If it is a problem for you, then I would suggest that you do as the many bearded ladies that I know do, and that is shave or depilate or get electrolysis to remove that hair.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And also, one more question. What about excessive sweating?
The medical treatment for excessive sweating is a shot of Botox into the sweat glands that are affected. That does seem to work, and if it's really problematic, that's probably the best solution. Sage infusion can be taken just by the sip, you know, not a whole cup of it, because it's really strong, and sage has the quality of drying up the expressions of the body. It dries up perspiration, it dries up breast milk, but it dries up everything at the same time, and it can make your eyes dry and your mouth dry as well.
Okay. All right, well, thank you.
Green blessings.
All right, we'll move on to the next caller in the 831 area code.
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Susan. This is Merritt from Santa Cruz. And I am
gathering. Hey, how you doing?
Hey.
How wonderful to hear from you.
Yay, yay, and it's lovely to hear you on the radio. It brings you so close into my very home, and I love it. I do have a problem, and I said, I'm gathering information, and you're one of the first places I want to go to gather wisdom from. And I have irritated upper eyelids, and this has been going on for about 4 months, and I have tried moisturizer on it, and now spring is here and things are getting warmer, and it's still not warmer, but more moisture in the air with spring and all, away from the dryness of winter, and it's still not going away. So,
have you used honey?
No, but I have. Just yesterday I was looking at starting to use honey.
Honey is calling.
Okay. I'll get my honey out and coat my eyelids.
Mm-hmm. And then after you do that, before you do that, get like a washcloth and put it in some really hot water, like boiling hot water. And don't put it boiling hot on your eyelids, but put the honey on, and then when the cloth is cooled down a little bit, put that warm cloth over your eyelids.
Okay, to bring up the circulation?
Yes. And if that does not feel right, then stop.
I will.
It also seems possible to me that there is something going on in your life that – at its most symbolic level, is irritating your eyes.
Yeah, maybe something I don't want to see. And I sort of put it down to the unshed tears. I come from, I never saw my mother cry, and I lived very closely with her for 25 years.
Mm.
So I have that kind of habit, too, of just, I praise my tears now when they come, you know, and I'm always said, thank you, I'm so glad you're here. And you were one of the greatest inspirations for being able to be tenacious and weep, you know, to see you were able to do that so coherently and without shame. And it really brought up for me how that was so empowering and such a blessing for me to witness that in you. And I admire it and hope to emanate it someday.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I think that's all very germane, but it to me it's a little bit, just the slightest tinge of I'm being punished because I didn't do this, you know, I'm being punished because I didn't cry. And what I'm thinking symbolically is a little bit closer to home, that there's a site. Has something changed around where you live? Is there something you have to look at now that you didn't have to look at before?
My drooping red eyelids.
Now, that's the snake eating its own tail, darling. Oh, Rufus. My eyes are irritated because I have to look in my eyes, which are irritated.
I will ponder that question, Susan, deeply.
All right, my love.
Thank you so
much.
You
are very precious. You are very, very precious to me, and you are imbued into my life in so many ways. Thank you so much, Merit.
Love you. Green blessings.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. We have another caller waiting on here as well. So
I always have a soft spot in my heart for the past apprentices, as we know. It was a long time ago that Merit apprentice, but the wonderful rack that she hung up for apprentices to hang their coats on still hangs there, and we use it all the time. Did you say there was another caller?
Yes, there is, in the 718 area code.
Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Hello. My name is Teresa. I've been to a few work weekends. And I have a question about probiotics and gut health. And so I was recently going to introduce some probiotics into my daughter's diet. She's been having off and on diarrhea, constipation, lots of different things. But I don't want to give it to her in a pill form. So I was just wondering how I can figure out exactly what bacteria is in different, maybe naturally brewed herbal or kombucha or something like that. Just wanted to get your thoughts on it.
Improvements in our ability to sequence DNA and a steep drop in price have made it possible for us to actually get a sense of what is going on in the gut biome. And I used to say to people that we knew that there were over 400 inhabitants of the gut. Well, there's probably more like 2,400.
Yep.
As a matter of fact, the gut flora is unique to individuals. Even identical twins have different gut flora.
Hmm.
So it's kind of like saying, what's the right kind of hair to have?
Right.
Well, there isn't any right kind of hair to have. You have the kind of hair you have.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, first of all, if your daughter is getting adequate fiber in her diet.
Okay.
And that would be from whole grains. And that would be from cooked fruits and cooked vegetables.
Okay.
And you said your daughter's how old?
She's four.
Mm-hmm. So she's, is she a browser or does she sit down to regular meals?
Oh, no, she loves to eat.
Okay, I asked you an either-or question and you said no, so she neither browses nor sits down to meals.
She would do both, but I prefer her to sit down to meals.
And are there foods that she refuses to eat at the meals?
She doesn't like beef when it's just straight by itself. She prefers her meat kind of cooked in with a vegetable. So she doesn't like individual, like, vegetables separate, chicken separate. She kind of likes it all just cooked in together.
Okay. And so long as it's all cooked in together, she's willing to eat a wide variety of things.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
That sounds good. Will she eat oatmeal?
Well, she has a gluten sensitivity. So she did for
according,
a long time. That was her...
According to?
According to her behavior, when she eats the gluten, her body reacts in a kind of spastic way. So she'll start shaking her head quite a bit.
So she eats rice? She gets brown rice in her diet?
She does, yes.
Does she eat cooked brown rice cereal?
Cooked brown rice cereal? No, I haven't made that for her.
What kind of hot cereal does she eat?
Right now, she doesn't eat hot cereal. We're trying to get the diarrhea under control.
Whole grains are what's going to control it. I believe that you have caused this disruption by removing gluten from her diet. That's my personal belief. And that you're turning her into food paranoid. That's simply my belief. I'm not there. I don't know what's going on. But I do know that I am backed up by the medical profession, which says 95% of people who say they're gluten intolerant aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And that the vast majority of symptoms that people put down to gluten intolerance have no connection at all. It's kind of like the persistent myth that eating foods in the nightshade family has something to do with arthritis. It doesn't. Dinosaurs didn't eat tomatoes, and they had arthritis. Lots and lots of studies have been done, and there's nothing in the nightshade family that causes or worsens arthritis. And yet you will hear lots and lots of people say, oh, yes, well, I can't eat tomatoes or potatoes or whatever it is in that family because of my arthritis. So we understand that there are these, sometimes they're called urban myths, as these ideas, and gluten intolerance is a very au courant idea. A lot of people are getting on it, and it's causing real health difficulties. Because gluten helps to feed gut flora. It's actually an important part of the diet. Now, there are people who have celiac disease and truly cannot tolerate gluten at all, but they really can't tolerate it in any form at all. And it's critically important for their longevity and health that they not ever eat any gluten. So the reason I'm asking about this is because I would like her to start getting some slippery elm. And while you could make slippery elm balls with slippery elm powder and honey, I would prefer that at first that she eats her slippery elm cooked in with some kind of grain. And if what you're comfortable with is brown rice cereal, then that's fine with me.
Mm, okay. It is important to have the slippery elm with a grain.
Yes.
Okay.
Because what we want to do is to give the gut something to hold onto.
Okay.
When there's diarrhea, we envision that things are moving through the gut too fast, and this happens because there's not sufficient bulk.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to bulk up the diet, and grains are the perfect way to do that. And slippery elm, especially combined with the grains, does a wonderful job of both eliminating diarrhea and easing constipation. I have had people who've been diagnosed with Crohn's disease, which is an autoimmune disease of the gut, and people who've been diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, and people who've been diagnosed with irritable bowel syndrome, all tell me that slippery elm was a miracle for them and stopped all of their symptoms, usually within a matter of days.
Okay, that's worth a try.
As for probiotics, what I usually suggest to people is simply see to it that there are a wide variety of active organisms in your diet. Yogurt, critical. All right. Sauerkraut, kombucha. Right. Any way that you can think of to get mold, bacteria, or fungi. Eat more mushrooms. Eat more seaweed. And seaweed and mushrooms go great mixed in with vegetables and meat, right?
Mm-hmm. That it does.
Right. And it's not like you have to put a plate of seaweed in front of her. You just throw it in with the other stuff that she's eating, and it's all for the better. Now, would you say that there's a connection between the emotions and the gut?
Yes.
I think so, too. And I think with a child that it works pretty well to say there's a connection between how you're feeling and what's how frequently you go to the bathroom, whether it's not frequently or too frequently. And so we're going to spend a little time talking to the body and telling our body that what we prefer is to have one bowel movement at the beginning of the day. And if you simply sit with her on a consistent basis, at a consistent time. As a matter of fact, the best time is the time when you'd want that bowel movement to happen. Then she, her psyche, and her body will get the idea.
Okay.
Okay?
Yep, that makes sense.
All right.
Thank you.
You are welcome. Green blessings.
Bye.
All right. Looks like we have another caller.
Okay.
Hello. It looks like you're dialing in from Skype, maybe.
Yes. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, hi. This is Joyce. I spoke to you a few weeks ago. I recently had the surgery for the endometrial cancer that had spread. And thank you so much for your wisdom that night. I am going to do the chemo, and but what has been happening since the surgery is I get about 2 hours of sleep a night, and it's really wearing me down at this point, the not sleeping. So I didn't know what suggestions, and what suggestions you would also have for, like, the chemo, what I can do during the chemo.
So tell me what happens when you go to bed.
I can fall asleep. I can fall asleep, and then
okay,
all of a sudden...
Okay, so when you get in bed at first, you fall asleep.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, it takes me a little bit, but I do fall asleep. I'll read, and I'll fall asleep. But then after about 2 hours, and this is consistent almost every night now, and it's almost a month. And I'll just
mm-hmm.
be wide awake, and then my mind will do, you know, that dance that it shouldn't be doing, and I'll try to do visualizations, meditations, but at that point, it's kind of off to the races.
Your mind is off to the races.
Yeah.
In a creative way?
No. It's almost a destructive, as I'm getting even closer to the starting the chemo and unfortunately dealing with the insurance companies, it's even more difficult than sleeping. So that, and I try not to think about that, but even when I try and visualize other things, it's just not working for me at this point.
I went to Elizabeth Kubler-Ross when I was studying with her, and I said, Elizabeth, I need more sleep. You're expecting us to work all day long with people who are very upset, and you're hardly giving us any time to sleep at all. And she glared at me, and she said, you're going to have to take the word sleep out of your vocabulary.
Mm.
And I said, Elizabeth, sleep, it's a basic human need. You know, food, water, shelter, sex, sleep, you got to have it. And she says, no, you don't. I'm looking. I mean, this woman's an MD, right? What's she telling me? You don't need sleep. What's this crazy woman, right? She says, you ever go to sleep and wake up feeling more tired than before you went to sleep? I said, that sometimes happens. She says, that's right, because you went to sleep but you didn't rest. She said, your problem is you don't know how to rest.
Yes.
She says, so I want you to start noticing all the times during your day when you can rest. Is it possible for you to take a nap in the afternoon?
I do. I could, but I don't at this point. I really don't. Because I find when I wake up, my heart, when I've tried doing that, my heart is beating very quickly after, like palpitations.
Mm-hmm. And you take a nap for how long?
Maybe 15 minutes.
Too short.
Maybe
needs to be half an hour.
Okay.
Need to really be able to get into sleep.
Okay.
And an hour is not a problem.
Okay.
And there are so many places that I have found to rest. You know, it's not really necessary for me to grip my steering wheel in a death grip at a red light. I can actually, like, totally release everything in my body when I'm at a red light. I can even go into a little trance, and the truth of the matter is, should I kind of space out at that red light, the driver behind me will wake me out of it by honking, won't they?
Yes.
So I really can't, you know, and those little moments add up. I'm in line at the supermarket. What do I have to do? What tension do I need? Besides staying upright, we don't want me melting into a puddle on the floor. Other than that, I let it all go.
Okay.
Find those places of rest. Just like in music, right? If it was all note, we would not be able to hear it. There has to be rest.
Mm-hmm.
Sleep. Is something that we see that people who have a lot of energy running through their body do not do much of.
Okay.
Thomas Edison did not have a bedroom. he had a couch in his workspace and he would lay down and take naps.
Okay.
If you look at really highly creative people, you do not find that they sleep 8 hours at a time. As a matter of fact, interestingly enough, not very much anthropological study has looked at sleep, but the few that have find that what's abnormal in terms of sleep, in terms of the world's population, is laying down and sleeping for 8 hours at a time. Hmm. That is the rarest way to sleep on this planet. The vast majority of people on this planet sleep in blocks of 2 to 4 hours several times throughout a 24-hour period.
Okay.
So I think you're holding yourself and your body to a standard that is no longer serving you. What kinds of repercussions are you having from little sleep?
I find it's not just even the small amount of sleep, it's what's going on in my mind during that time. Even though I know the last time you said about the cancer is, you know, forget self-blame, and that worked really well during the day, at night those thoughts kind of hit. All mm-hmm. those stinking thinking
did you,
kind of thoughts.
Did you start a book of these thoughts? Did we
no.
talk about that?
No. No, we didn't.
Okay. I would like you to get a blank book.
Okay.
Whenever these thoughts come up, I want you to write them down. Now, you can read your book anytime you want to, but once you've written a thought down, you're not allowed to ever have it again.
Hmm. Hmm. Wow, very freeing. Oh, I felt that in my body as you're saying that. Oh, thank God. Oh. I just felt that.
They're there. They'll be safe in your book. You can get to them anytime you want to.
Okay.
But you're not allowed to think them after that.
Okay.
All right?
That's wonderful. Thank you for that.
You're so welcome.
Now, when I start chemo, certain
the
foods...
The primary herb that I have heard from many people, including oncologists, is helpful, is milk thistle seed tincture.
Okay.
There was a really interesting experiment done. They took some laboratory mice and they fed it this poisonous mushroom. The mushroom is called the destroying angel. And all the mice died. Duh. Then they took the mice and they fed them this poisonous mushroom and then they fed them some milk thistle seed.
Hmm.
Couple of them survived it. Okay, they said, let's feed them the poisonous mushroom and the milk thistle seed at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
A fair amount of them survived it. And then they said, let's feed them the milk thistle seed and then give them the poisonous mushroom. And over half of the mice survived.
Mm, really? Okay.
So while you can take milk thistle after your chemotherapy, to my mind, the most good is gotten by taking it beforehand.
Before.
And it doesn't have to be right beforehand. It'll stay in your system for a few hours. I usually say is if you can do it like within the hour before the chemotherapy, that's probably optimum. But some people, you know, can't do it on that time frame, and that's all right. So long as it's beforehand.
Okay, now I know 12 o'clock at night, before the days I have chemo, I have to take a high dose of prednisone. From 12 o'clock and then 6 o'clock in the morning, that's the regimen that they've put me on now. So I can take it, I guess, closer to when I start the chemo in the morning.
So if you would like to feel better,
yes.
My suggestion is that you stop being put on things and start choosing.
Okay.
I have chosen to take prednisone
for
my chemotherapy because my research and my doctor's research has indicated that I will get through the chemotherapy better if I do that.
Okay.
Even though I know it can cause psychotic breaks.
Right. Right.
Right. But when you're being put on things, it's almost as though you're sitting and watching the TV show of your own life, huh?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly.
Rather than making active choices.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not going to make active choices right now when your life is at stake, when are you going to make active choices?
Well, I guess for me that had to do with calling you about the milk thistle and what I can do.
Yeah.
That's
but
a, for
still,
me that...
it has. But this wordage is very important.
Okay.
One of the most important books that I read, and I read, gosh, thousands and thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of words about breast cancer, was a book called Patient No More.
Hmm.
About a woman who said that she didn't really stand a chance with her cancer until she rejected the idea that she was a patient.
Thank you. That's why even when they talk to me about the cancer fight, I just don't even want to use that term, the fight.
Elizabeth Kubler-Ross talked about a Quaker man and who refused to fight his cancer. And she glared at him. She had a wonderful glare. And she said to him, well, then you figure out some other way to get rid of it. And when she came back a week later, he said to her, my cells are carrying the cancer off in a loving embrace. Are you satisfied? And, of course, she said, so long as you're getting rid of it, I am quite satisfied. It doesn't have to be a fight.
Okay. Thank you so much for everything.
You are so welcome. Keep calling us and let us know how you are, okay?
Thank you.
Okay, green blessings. Good night.
Good night.
All right, we have another person waiting on here.
Okay.
All right, in the 518 area code.
Yes, hello, my name is Ralph.
Hello, Ralph.
How are you? My question is about oversized stomach that seems to be full of gas.
You know, there are aromatic seeds that are very helpful in relieving gas, and they are called carminatives, and that always amuses me because carmen means to sing, and so carminatives release gas, and they make you sing. Huh? So these aromatic seeds are available at any supermarket. I'm talking about fennel seed, or aniseed, or caraway seed, or coriander seed, or even celery seed. And you take about a teaspoon of the seed, put it in a cup, pour boiling water over it, and let it sit just for a couple of minutes. As a matter of fact, I say don't walk away from it. Just, you know, start to drink it as soon as the water's cool enough for it to drink. You don't want the seeds to brew too long, more than five. It's kind of like green tea. You don't want it sitting there for a long time. So make your tea, drink it up. You can drink this at the beginning of meals. You can drink it after meals. You can drink it any time in between. And any and all of these aromatic seeds have excellent reputation for helping to relieve that gas. If you think that it's more than perhaps just gas, then you might, in addition, want to consider taking some dandelion root before each meal. And dandelion root spreads its beneficent healing powers throughout the digestive system to the liver, the gallbladder, the stomach, the pancreas. So that grouping of digestive organs that's right there at the solar plexus, right kind of where the belly starts, shall we say, is very powerfully influenced back to health by dandelion. A dose of the root tincture can be anywhere from 5 to 25 drops, depending on how much you feel you need. I suggest that people start off with a smaller dose and work their way up.
Okay.
Okay?
Yes.
Thanks for calling.
All right, and I'll let you know what happened. It's nice meeting you again. Actually, I met you at Robin Priest's house about a week ago.
Oh, yeah, I remember you. Okay. Well, good to hear from you. Thanks for calling.
Okay, thank you. You have a good day now.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, looks like we're going to move on to some email questions now.
Righty.
All right. Hi, Susan. I met you years ago at Omega when I was singing there with Baba Olatunji. I am in a health crisis. Ultrasounds and CAT scans discovered a 22C solid mass in my ovary and an enlarged uterus. Can't be biopsies, so scheduled for extensive abdominal surgery next Monday, March 31st, with possible complete hysterectomy. I really hate meds and have been trying to deal with diet, herbs, homeopathic remedies, but it's just too big and will take too long and not good for internal organs. I wish I knew that sugar, caffeine, alcohol, red meat, red wine, soy, etc., all things I have been ingesting were bad during menopause, a little late now. There needs to be more information for women about this. Also the BPAs. Anyway, any last-minute advice you might have for me, much appreciated, and would love to study with you more someday when this is all over. All the best, and thank you.
I find these kinds of situations, when they arise in our life, to be really golden opportunities to gather around us the loving kindness of those who are near and dear to us. The surgery that I had was very minor surgery, truly nothing to worry about at all. It was the repair of my hernia. And I told those who I know care about me when the surgery was scheduled for, and I asked them to start really sending me love the night before. I woke up the morning of the surgery in bliss. It was as though I had taken something. I literally woke up laughing. As my eyes opened, I saw like negative images of faces of people who loved me. I felt their love for me. I felt cradled and surrounded by this love. When they came to give me the preoperative pill to feel good, I laughed at them. I said, there's nothing you could give me that would make me feel better. In the pre-op room, there was a young man there. I was in a hospital that does only hernia repair, so he was there for a hernia repair. Had torn his during a sporting event, and they had already given him 2 or 3 feel-good pills, and he was not feeling good at all. And finally, in desperation, they said to him, go and sit by that woman, me. And he came, and he sat next to me. And the amount of love and care that was pouring into me influenced him as well. Within 5 minutes, we were chatting, and he was laughing and ready to go into his surgery. There are 7 rivers of healing. There are 7 medicines. And break and enter. High-tech medicine is one of them. Aren't we lucky to be living in such times when we can open up your body and take out something that doesn't belong there and close you back up again, and you can go on living and be in health? It is an absolute miracle. I hear some guilt and blame and shame that somehow you feel like you've caused this to happen. You haven't. I don't agree with your list of things. I don't think there's anything wrong with women eating those things. I don't think that you have caused this growth. I am sure, however, that you can use this as a way to be a wholer person. Understand that the brain is hardwired for a complete and whole body. if a baby is born without an arm and you throw a ball at the baby while scanning the baby's brain, the brain will react as though it were an arm there and raise that arm to protect the baby against the ball, even though that baby has never had an arm. The brain only knows wholeness should it be necessary for the surgeons to remove your uterus and to remove your ovaries. Your brain will never know it. Your brain will carry on as though you are a whole being and you can follow suit. You can say, I am a modern person who does something that even shamans couldn't do. I can give up part of the inside of my body and go on walking and being alive. Whoo! Amazing, huh? As for the other rivers, the first four rivers, as we remember, serenity medicine, information medicine, energy medicine, and lifestyle medicine, make us healthier if we do have to engage in the last three medicines, alternative medicine, pharmaceutical medicine, and high-tech medicine. You're going to be spending some time in high-tech medicine and pharmaceutical medicine. Be sure that you've covered the first four medicines so that you'll be healthy and flexible and be able to make the best of modern medicine. Green blessings.
All right. Let's go to the next question. Hi, I am writing for guidance. I am 37 and will be having a very necessary hysterectomy on Wednesday. My children are done with my womb, but I have great sadness over the thought of it no longer being a part of me. Do you have any reading suggestions? Thank you.
In a way, I have already answered this question, but let me say it again. You know that your uterus is going to be removed, but your brain does not. And so I would say, go along with your brain and say, hey, they may have taken my physical uterus, but my energetic uterus is still there. I would say, fight for your ovaries. Don't let them tell you that you don't need your ovaries. And while they're in there, it's just as easy to take them out. Fight for your ovaries. If at all possible, retain your ovaries. You know, there's a lot of women who've had their uterus taken out. As a matter of fact, in Western countries like Germany, the United States, by the age of 60, 35% of women have had their uterus removed. Women that you know, women that you've stood in line with at the supermarket, gone to church with, sat in a movie theater with, are women who don't have a uterus, and they are still whole. This is a necessary hysterectomy. Let it be a special shamanic initiation, not something that's being done to you against your wishes. Claim your power in it. It's all right to accept modern medicine. We don't have to be the victim of it. I trust you. I trust that you are making the choice that is absolutely best for you and that you will take care of yourself. Green blessings. Hey, and you know what? An almost entire hour has passed and I haven't said it, so let me say it now. Drink your nourishing herbal infusions, all of you.
Well do. Sounds like you're drinking yours right now.
Our own home harvested nettle.
Mm.
It is so good.
I just had some nettle miso soup tonight, which was very good that I harvested.
From nettle in your garden?
Not from my garden, but from the forest here. Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Mm, yeah. All right, so we'll move on to the next question. Hi, Susan. I was diagnosed in January of 2014 with scleroderma, also known as systemic sclerosis, and is a chronic systemic autoimmune disease. I've never been one to embrace conventional medicine, so you came to mind. I have all of your books and have attended several talks you gave here in Rhode Island many years ago. I'm a mother of two young girls, an artist and farmer, so I'm used to a very active lifestyle. These symptoms have really slowed me down physically and have taken a toll on me emotionally. I started feeling the initial symptoms last year on 8/14 with pain in the balls of my right foot. It then progressed across my foot, and the same process started in the left foot. It then went to my right hand, then to my left. It moved into every part of my body, always the same way, from right to left. My rheumatologist wants me to start taking CellCept, which is an immune suppressant, and I will if I have to, but I was wondering if you had any experience with this debilitating disease. I have changed my diet, no more caffeine, sugar, dairy, or wheat products. I drink an infusion of oat straw and dandelion leaves daily. Can you think of anything else I could do to slow this down or maybe put it into remission? I know you are a very busy woman and would appreciate any thoughts you have to offer, as I have always respected you and what you do. Thank you, Susan.
First of all, gutting your diet of critically necessary foods is not a way to be healthier. It's a way to really bollocks up your immune system. You know, the immune system and the liver don't function very well unless there's meat in the diet. I've already gone on this evening about the craziness of tossing wheat out of your diet. Wheat is a critically important part of most people's diet. Now, if what you mean is I'm not eating refined, enriched white flour products, hey, that's great. But you're not eating any wheat, it just seems like mumbo-jumbo to me, truthfully. Mumbo-jumbo, like, okay, something bad is happening, and so we're going to blame meat and dairy and wheat. What? These are harmless innocents here. And again, you're not improving your health by taking them out of your diet. You want to improve your health, get better quality products, get only organic meat. Get biodynamic meat. Get only organic dairy products. Get biodynamic dairy products. Improve your diet by improving the quality of the food you eat, not by throwing out whole classes of important, nourishing foods. Grr. Don't mix herbs in your infusion. Grr. It makes me wonder if you're really making an infusion at all. Shall we review? An infusion is 1 ounce by weight of dried herb. You need a scale. I've been making infusion nightly for 25 years. I weigh my herb out every single night. There's no way to eyeball it. There's no way to guess. There's no way to estimate. It's not a volume measurement. It's a weight measurement, and it's 1 ounce. 1 ounce of dried herb, must be dried herb. You say you're making oat straw. That would be 1 ounce of dried oat straw in a quart jar, that jar filled to the top with boiling water, a tight lid screwed on, and that allowed to steep for a minimum of 4 hours or up to 10 hours overnight. It's just fine. Why would anyone ruin the wonderful taste of oat straw by putting dandelion leaves in there? It makes me want to cry. It's as though somebody painted a mustache on Mona Lisa. Don't do it. You want to drink some dandelion leaf? Do it on its own. It has its own taste. It has its own abilities. It's not happy with oat straw. Don't put them together. And why are we just fixated on oat straw? This problem with nettle, comfrey, red clover, linden, each one of these herbs in the five-herb rotation has important things to give you. comfrey is the herb, in fact, that I would think of, first of all, for what's going on with you, with the scleroderma, because comfrey improves flexibility at the skin, at the joints, in the bones, in the muscles, and in the gut, the respiratory system, and the reproductive system. Comfrey is the go-to herb when we want more flexibility. And my understanding of scleroderma is that things start to tighten up. Ligaments tighten up, tendons tighten up, the skin tightens up and thickens in places. So comfrey is going to be a wonderful ally for helping that to move through. Linden is an anti-inflammatory. It's the one herb that we use only half an ounce of, and you'll see why when you weigh it out. It's kind of big and fluffy stuff. So 1/2 ounce of dried linden in a quart jar, filled at the top with boiling water, and allowed to steep, tightly lidded, for 4 to 10 hours. I would very much like to see you separate the dandelion out from the oat straw, continue to make oat straw infusion, but do make it by weighing the herb out, and add to your rotation comfrey leaf infusion and linden flower infusion. I prefer to buy my linden flowers whole. Part of the linden flower is green and it looks like a leaf, but it's not. There would be nothing wrong with using the leaves, but usually when you get linden flower, there is green material in there, which is not the leaves. So I prefer to buy whole linden rather than cut linden, partly because it's a flower and I feel that it holds its aroma better when it's not cut, but also partly because the cut herb can be kind of slimy. And if it's too slimy for you and you can only get the cut herb, then I find that drinking it heated up will overcome that slimy texture. So let's make the diet a healthy diet, which includes some meat, some dairy, and some wheat, as well as good quantities of cooked vegetables, cooked fruits, nuts, greens. We talked about the ideal diet earlier on, chocolate, fish, wonderful things. And let's increase the amount of nourishing herbal infusion. I like to drink about a quart of nourishing herbal infusion a day, but even half that amount definitely has wonderful benefits. And you're liking oat straw, that's great. And you want to have some dandelion leaf separately, that's great too. And then adding comfrey leaf separately and adding linden flower separately. And give us an email back or a call back in 6 weeks or so and tell us what's happening. Green blessings.
All right. Next question. Hi there. I have a sinus question. For weeks now, I've had reoccurring, if not constant, pain and pressure in my ears, particularly my right ear. I know it is related to my chronic sinus issues. I have dry sinuses resulting in headaches and post-nasal drip, but almost no stuffiness. The headaches in between my eyes are frequent as well. I've tried the neti pot, but that only brings a very temporary relief, and I don't think it's good to use with ear problems. I've tried lemon balm, which I read can help with sinus headaches, but that didn't bring much relief either, though it does help great for my anxiety stress levels. I've tried steam inhalation and herbal teas with peppermint, elderflower, and echinacea. These have only brought temporary relief as well. What would you recommend as an herbal nourishment to this situation? Thank you so much in advance.
The herbs that we've just been talking about, linden flower infusion and comfrey leaf infusion, are wonderful allies. However, there is a bit of a contradiction in what you have just said, and I'm not really clear on exactly what you mean. Let's start from here. The sinuses are small cavities in the head, in the skull. They are lined with mucus. That mucus is supposed to run down the back of the nose and down the back of the throat and sweeping bacteria with it as it goes and take those bacteria down to the stomach where the bacteria die in the acid lake of the stomach. So that's what sinuses are supposed to do. They're supposed to be mucus coming from the sinuses down the back of the nose, down the back of the throat, and down into the stomach. When the sinuses are dry, then there is no postnasal drip. It's kind of like saying the tap in my bathroom is broken and no water is coming out, so it drips all the time. And if your mind is skittering across that, that's how my mind skittered across. You're saying, I have dry sinuses with postnasal drip. Obviously, either the water is or is not coming out of the faucet, but it can't be doing both at the same time, although it certainly could alternate. One of the things that happens when the mucous surfaces anywhere in the respiratory system get dry is that there can be a push by the body to rehydrate that area. But then once it's rehydrated, it's not really dry anymore. So again, the sinuses wouldn't really be dry. You might be in a dry environment. And of course, getting a humidifier. And I don't like the ones that break the water up into tiny little drops, because those tiny little drops can carry bacteria deep into lung tissues. So I just prefer the good old-fashioned kind of humidifier. Yes, breathing steam would help, but how about breathing steam all day long? I'm sitting next to my wood stove, and on my wood stove is a pan, and there is water steaming up out of that pan. And so long as my wood stove is on, water is steaming up out of there. I evaporate out into the air, oh, I don't know, maybe 8 to 10 gallons of water on a daily basis. I'm putting a fair amount of moisture into the air. I suggest that people do that. And if, again, if for some reason you don't have a wood stove or you can't do it in any other way, then a humidifier is a great way to increase the moisture in the air. There are a variety of hot-cold treatments that have been recommended for people who are dealing especially with sinus headaches, such as putting the feet in ice water and putting a hot towel across the sinuses. One of my teachers was very much into reflexology, and whenever she encountered someone with a sinus headache, out would come her bag with clothespins, and she would put a clothespin on each end of each toe. So she had 10 clothespins, and she would just nip those clothespins right on the very ends of the toes. Sometimes they would fall off the big toes, but they'd stay on the other toes. And then people would be screaming and hollering, and Margo would say, that's just the energy working up to your sinuses. Just let that go. That's just the energy working its way on up to people's sinuses. And indeed, in reflexology, the sinuses are said to be at the ends of the toes, and she said she couldn't found that she couldn't grab the toes very well, but the clothespins did a great job. She'd leave them on for about 10 minutes, and people said that it did indeed give them more than simply temporary relief. Echinacea can help if you think there's an infection. What I find is that many people don't take enough echinacea. I don't find echinacea tea very effective at all. I find echinacea tincture the most effective form. And if you're going to buy echinacea tincture, it's critically important to avoid any echinacea tincture that has golden seal in it, and you'll have to read the back of the label very carefully to avoid that. And to counter an infection, we're going to need 2 to 4 dropperfuls of echinacea tincture as a dose, and that dose repeated in the acute part of the infection, when the infection is really strong. That dose can be repeated as frequently as every hour or every 2 hours or every 3 hours, what's needed. And as the infection starts to wane and you start to feel better, the dose can be taken every 4 or 5 or 6 hours, and then ultimately winding down to taking it every 8 to 10 hours. And I have found this to be quite useful for people who have sinus problems. Hope it helps you too. Green blessings.
All right. Next question. Hi, Susan. I have hemiplegia on the right side due to diabetes and high blood pressure. I am currently having so much pain in the paralyzed arm. Could you please suggest any medicinal herbs for this? Thank you so much.
One of the first herbs that comes to mind when someone says that they are dealing with pain or nerve pain is skullcap. And skullcap tincture made from the fresh skullcap. Now, you just go out to the store, you're probably not going to find a skullcap tincture made from fresh skullcap. Many, many manufacturers make it from dried skullcap, and as far as I'm concerned, it's more of a placebo once it's made from the dried herb. This is an herb that really needs to be tinctured fresh. Interestingly enough, the Chinese think of skullcap as a wonderful antibiotic, as a really powerful herb for helping the immune system, not something that American herbalists think about. Could you spell that long word that she used?
Yes, hemiplegia is H-E-M-I-P-L-E-G-I-A.
A-L-H-I-H-E-M-I?
Yeah, P-L-E-G-I-A.
H-E-M-I. H-E-M-I-P-L-E-G-I-A.
Yes.
Is that what it is?
Correct.
Hemiplegia, paralysis of one side. So she has paralysis on one side, and it's that side that hurts.
Mm-hmm.
Is that,
yeah,
I
she has a paralyzed arm.
The letter? So she has it only on one, in one arm. It's not the entire side of the body.
Yeah, it says her right side due to diabetes and high blood pressure.
So it is the entire right side, or it's just the right arm? You may
doesn't,
not know.
It doesn't say specifically if it's her whole right side, but it does say that there is
okay.
pain in the
you're
arm.
Okay, you're as confused as I am. That's fine. I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't more confused than you.
Okay.
So skullcap tincture. Usually have people start off with a dose of 3 to 5 drops, and that can be repeated in 10 minutes. And that can be repeated in 10 minutes. That can be repeated in 10 minutes. And you add up however many doses of 3 to 5 drops you've taken before you start to get pain relief. And that's your starting dose the next time. But this way, you don't take more than you need. Some people are quite sensitive to skullcap. And it is also considered a soporific. It's something that can put you to sleep. As a matter of fact, I was talking about skullcap at a university. And I had passed the bottle around so that people could smell it and take one drop and taste it. And the bottle was put back in front of me with the top knot screwed on, and I gestured and knocked the bottle over, and, oh, my goodness, it spilled. And, of course, I didn't want to waste it, so I kind of scooped it off the table into my hand and just sucked it up off my hand. I didn't really think anything of it except I didn't want to waste it. However, this was the only time, driving back from that university, was the only time in my life that I have had to pull off the road and take a nap because I was overwhelmed with the need to go to sleep. My eyelids felt like they had lead weights on them and nothing that I could do. Turn the radio on loud, open the window, blast cold air in my face. None of that was going to keep me awake. I could tell I was going to fall asleep. Found a rest stop, pulled off, and had to take a nap. Hey, skullcap, it relieves pain, but it can also, in large doses, put you to sleep. Sometimes that's what we need. Sometimes that's not what we need. The other thing that I would suggest is, and this comes from the time that I spent with a man who had one leg, and he was not born this way. His leg was chewed off by a machine, and the off switch to the machine was not where he could reach it. And I'm telling you this because I want you to know that this man was very angry. He was furious about the loss of his leg. And as a matter of fact, he said that when he was in the hospital, he was so angry that all he did was scream. And when I knew him, he told me that it wasn't until he started to understand his anger that the pain went away. And I had not realized, I didn't have very much experience at that point, but I had not realized that even if you lose part of your body or even if you have paralysis in part of your body, that that doesn't mean that you can't feel pain in that part of your body. And he, of course, said that the pain that he felt because of his anger was a really excruciating kind of pain. We did some work together. We did some trance work together. We did some meditation work together so that he could find a way to forgive the kibbutz where he was working, where this accident happened, and that he could forgive himself for slipping into the machine. One of the reasons that we were together was that he was going back to the kibbutz because a friend of his who had taken over his job when he had to leave had just slipped and had his leg chewed off by the same machine. And he was going back and he was going to close down the plant until they put a guardrail or until they put the cutoff switch where someone could reach it. I hope this has been helpful to you. Green blessings.
Yes. Okay. Next question. Hi. I have irritable bowel syndrome and never know when it will happen. I have to go to the bathroom and end up there for an hour. Is there anything I can take to help me with this? It is so frustrating when I have to go out. Also, I have general anxiety and take Lexapro. I was wondering what I can take instead of this drug. My anxiety is usually bad stomach pain. Thank you.
I think that we all know that there's a connection between our feelings and our guts. As a matter of fact, we talk about gut feelings, don't we? So we really know that the guts and the feelings go together. What is anxiety? Anxiety is fear that can't be used. My Tai Chi teacher puts it this way. When Dorothy got to the city of Oz and went to the Emerald Palace and opened the doors, she was very anxious. There was a big room and a big booming voice, I am the Wizard of Oz. And anxiety kind of sticks us in place. We don't know which way to turn because we don't know where the threat is coming from. But when Toto ran over and pulled back the curtain, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, then Dorothy could be afraid. And when we're afraid, we have a direction that we can take. We can go toward that which frightens us, fight. Or we can go away from that which frightens us, flight. And both fight and flight are excellent decisions. Fear is a useful emotion. It helps to remove obstacles in our life, and it helps to get us out of situations that would be truly threatening. Anxiety, however, is a useless feeling. This may sound absolutely crazy, but what I encourage people who are anxious to do is find out what they're afraid of. Really find your fear. Anxiety is a kind of smokescreen around the fear. But once we know what the fear is, we can actually do something about that fear where we can never, ever, ever do anything about the anxiety because it's not actually related to any real thing. Herbs that can relieve anxiety. Well, we already heard about one tonight. Somebody wrote in and said that she was taking lemon balm, drinking lemon balm, and even though it didn't help her sinuses, it was definitely helping her emotional state. Motherwort tincture definitely helps to relieve anxiety. Drinking oat straw infusion strengthens the nervous system and makes it easier to be afraid instead of being anxious. And there was something else that she asked at the beginning of the letter. Could you remind me of that, Rebecca?
Yes. She says I have to go to the bathroom and end
right,
up there for an hour. Is there anything I can take to help?
Okay, that's great. The irritable bowel syndrome. And the reason that I talked about the anxiety first is that the anxiety to my mind is behind the irritable bowel syndrome. And that's why I kind of started this by saying that there's a connection between our feelings and our gut. So that is, to my mind, the more critical issue of finding the fear rather than the anxiety, because, again, the gut can't do anything about the anxiety, and so it kind of eats away at it. Meanwhile, we can soothe and nourish the gut with slippery elm, and you can cook slippery elm into oatmeal or any other hot cereal, or you can make slippery elm balls by mixing dried slippery elm powder with honey. I have a YouTube where I'm making slippery elm balls, and my granddaughter, Monica Jean, has her own YouTube where she is making slippery elm balls. So you get to see two wonderful women making slippery elm balls on YouTube if you're a little unsure about how to use them. But I would say, you might want to do what I do. I always travel with slippery elm whenever I leave the house. There's some slippery elm in my car. You never know when you're going to be struck with food poisoning, or especially since I'm a public speaker, when I'm going to need something to help my throat, slippery elm to the rescue. Green blessings.
All right. I think we have time for one more question. Hi, Susan. I'm a chronic fatigue syndrome patient and aspiring herbalist. So I've been doing some research on herbs and nutrition for chronic fatigue syndrome. In doing so, I came across a response you made to another inquiry instructing someone not to take DHA for candida. Are you generally suspicious of DHA, or is it just not effective for candida? I'd really appreciate your feedback. Many thanks.
Well, the statement that I usually make here is there is no such thing as candida. Now, that's obviously an untrue statement. Obviously, there is candida. Babies get thrush in their mouth. Women get vaginal, overgrowth of candida. But what I mean is there is not a candida overgrowth in anybody's gut. Yeah, I've seen it occasionally. People have been given heavy-duty chemotherapy and are going to die from it. They can get candida in their gut. People who are end-stage AIDS, they can get candida in their gut. But I've never met anybody with candida in their gut who survives it. It's a killer. It's not that it kills. It kind of comes along for the ride there. So I'm not sure what exactly you're talking about, but it kind of sounds like somebody has told you that your chronic fatigue has to do with a candida in your gut, and I'm here to say I think that that's a bunch of boo-ha, that there is no candida overgrowth in your gut. Now, do you think that your gut flora are not really up to the task? Well, then get some healthy gut flora going. Get some yogurt. Get some sauerkraut. Get some homemade beer. Get some wine. Get some good stuff going on in your gut if you think that that's what's happening. I am unaware that there is any particular diet for chronic fatigue. In fact, whenever we're dealing with a syndrome, we have to understand that a syndrome is not a disease. A syndrome is a group of symptoms that occur with more or less severity in people that are diagnosed as having that syndrome. My experience in working with people who've been diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome is that they are going through some brain changes. Some, we might call them wiring shifts. Part of their wiring is being pulled out, and it is being replaced usually with heavier duty wiring. And certainly limited diets are not what we want when there's this kind of thing going on. With any kind of syndrome, what we usually want is the broadest possible diet of the best quality food. I know that that's kind of a general answer, but it was kind of a general question. Hope it helps. Green blessings.
All right.
We might even have time for one more if you have a mini question. I'll do my best to give a mini answer.
Let's see if this
and
one...
And I know I didn't talk about DHEA, and I could do that. We could go get the PDR for supplements. But, you know, hey, I mean, everybody who's listened to me knows Susan thinks that pills are drugs, that there's no good that's going to come from taking soft drugs. As a matter of fact, when it comes to drugs, I actually trust the pharmaceutical companies more than I trust the supplement makers, because at least the pharmaceutical companies have to operate under laws and you get a package insert. So I am looking at the PDR for nutritional supplements, and we are looking up DHEA, dehydro epiandrosterone, and it is a natural substance produced in the adrenal glands, the gonads, and the brains. It is a steroid hormone. So we're taking a supplement that is a steroid hormone, all right? Several studies have failed to find any benefit from DHEA in these things. It is contraindicated for those who have a diagnosis of prostate, breast, uterine, or ovarian cancer. Supplements should be avoided by children, adolescents, pregnant women, nursing mothers. Adverse reactions, and there is a long list of adverse reactions and interactions. There's a fairly large list there. And I got to say that what the PDR says seems to indicate that DHEA has not been found to be effective against any particular human problem in many studies, and that there are some pretty severe adverse effects from taking it. So you might want to check out the PDR yourself or look further. Green blessings. And that should bring us right up to our guest tonight, and a wonderful, exciting guest with us tonight by the name of Gina Lake. Gina is a gifted intuitive, and she has a degree in counseling psychology, as well as over 20 years' experience supporting people in their spiritual growth. The focus of Gina Lake's writing and teaching is on helping people be in the present moment and to live a happy and fulfilled life. She also likes to shed light on the ego and other programming that interferes with that ability. In addition to the work that she does, Gina spends time writing, and she is the author of 12 books including such titles as From Stress to Stillness, Trusting Life, Embracing the Now, and Radical Happiness. Welcome to the show, Gina Lake.
Hi, Susan. Thanks for having me.
We're so glad that you're here. Why don't we just jump right in and ask you what it means to be present?
Ah, yes. What it means to be present. You know, I think that people know what this is. They have a sense of this, even if they've never heard a definition of it, because the very fortunate thing is that we actually are present, every single one of us, a good part of the time, whether we're knowing that we're present or not, because it is our natural state to be present. And what I mean by that is that we are just here now in the moment without being lost in the virtual reality created by our thoughts and our feelings, which just take us into our own little world in which we are the center of the universe. And everything is about me and my life and what happened in the past and what's going to happen in the future. This little virtual reality, which is created by thoughts, that the thoughts that go through our head, is the only thing that can keep you from being present. It's really shocking when you see that. We are so programmed as human beings to pay attention to our thoughts that we actually miss out on being present to what's really here now in life. And our thoughts are just distorting our present moment experience. So we actually have to learn to be more present. And yet, like I said, we already do know how to be present because we can't help it, because this is our true nature, to just be here now. And it gets clouded over by thoughts. And so it's like the blue sky that's always here, ever present, and that we can't always see the blue sky because of the cloudiness that our thoughts bring to it. But it's always here, and we all know it.
I don't know if you got an opportunity to listen to any of the show, but there was a woman who called in fairly early on, and she said that she was having a problem that she would lay down, she'd go to sleep for a couple hours, and then she'd wake up, and she would be having terrible thoughts. What kind of advice could you give to someone who that's happening to?
Well, just in general, of course, it's hard to speak to a person individually in an individual experience. But one of the main tools that that I suggest is really simply learning to become more aware of your thoughts. That's the first step, becoming more aware of your thoughts. And meditation is very, very helpful. There's no other tool like it to help you become more aware of what you're thinking and more detached from it. And another tool is, once you are aware of what your thoughts are, then you can begin to investigate them and ask, is it true? And what you find is that most of your thoughts are completely untrue, partly untrue, mostly untrue, and unnecessary. And this is a pretty radical statement, but honestly, it is the amazing thing that we discover when we become more distant from this program that's running in our heads. We begin to really get a look at it. We see how crazy so much of it is, that it's not based on reality, and that we actually have a choice whether to go into those thoughts further or to turn our attention to something else, something real, to our sensations, to what is here now in real experience. And so part of the solution to this, and of course there could be deep psychological issues, woundings and such, that drive really negative thoughts. And so there might be need to be some real investigation with a therapist if one's thoughts are very compelling and very, very difficult to detach from. But each of us can learn to become more and more aware of our thoughts. We can learn to detach from them. We can start a practice of meditation, which helps us to experience what is real and true right here and now. Because, you know, once we get in touch with our true nature and get grounded in that sense of ourselves as the being that we are, then all of those fears and feelings that are part of our human nature become put in proper perspective. They are part of us as a human being, but they are not the whole truth, and they do not have to consume us or drive us or shape our life. So we learn to become a master of our inner experience by becoming aware of it and by detaching from it and by getting to know our true self really, really well through meditation and practice of being more present.
Excellent, excellent answer. One of the tools that I suggested to her was that she get a blank book, and whenever she had one of these thoughts, that she write it down in that book, and that she could read anything from the book at any time she wanted, but she was never again allowed to think that thought.
Oh, that's wonderful. I love that. Yeah, and you know, and it's putting our thoughts down on paper is a way we can really get a good look at them. And, you know, it helps us to focus our attention on the investigation of them. So we put them down. That's how we become aware of them. And then there they are in front of us. We can go down the list one by one and say, is that really true? Is that really true? And what you'll find is a lot of partial truths, which are very tricky because partial truths, they have some truth to them. So they hook us. But it's very difficult to find a truth or a thought, that is completely true. Because our words and our thoughts just do not contain the whole truth. And the whole truth is going to contain a much, much bigger picture and a much more positive picture than our thoughts ever present. And so, you know, the truth is actually more like zooming out and stepping way, 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 way back and including the fact, including a lot of positive truths in with that narrow, limiting, and probably negative truth that the mind gets very, very focused in on. So, yeah, that's a great idea. And honestly, you really don't need those thoughts at all. So your idea of not thinking that thought again, well, you know, it's... We can't really keep our thoughts from popping into our mind, but we do have the power to turn our attention away from them and not feed them. So, yeah, absolutely. We don't need those thoughts at all to function. We'll be much happier, much more functional, without paying attention to those thoughts. And that's one of the tricks, is that we're programmed somehow. This human programming is pretty crazy and backwards. We're programmed to believe all the thoughts that run through our mind almost without exception. You know, we just automatically accept it because it's in our mind.
That was a priceless gift from one of my teachers to me, who said point blank, you don't have to believe everything you think.
Yeah. Yeah, when you realize that, it's so powerful. It's a huge, huge step in one's spiritual evolution to really get that. Because before that, we were kind of sleepwalking. We're listening to the programming. We're believing the programming. We're acting it out. We're following it. Our thoughts say, do this. Our feelings impel us to do a certain thing. And we just do it. And all of that is just, it's just conditioned reactions to life. instead of being a master of how you'll respond to life, which requires you to be aware of your thoughts and aware of the being that you are and how it might choose to live this life. Because really, in any moment, we can either follow our thoughts and live the life that our thoughts, that is our ego, would have us live, or we can drop into the present moment and live the life that the being that we are is naturally already living. It just gets, our life just gets co-opted by following our thoughts. But actually, who we are is right here and now and has always been living our life and responding just naturally and spontaneously to things. And so it's not really all that mysterious who we are. We think we are a certain person who has certain thoughts and feelings. But when we drop out of the mind, we discover that we're a being who is already naturally moving through life and responding a certain way. And when we can learn to live from that place, our life changes. It's transformed. We're more loving. We're more compassionate. We're more at peace. We respond more wisely. Being present puts us in touch with our innate wisdom and with the loving being that we naturally are. Because we are. That's a really good news, is our true nature is everything we've ever wanted to be. Peaceful, loving, content, compassionate, wise, patient, kind. You know, those are all the things that really make us happy, and we already are that. And the only thing in the way is that we think that we are a petty, jealous, angry, sad, unhappy, less than, unworthy, trouble-filled person. None of that's true. Such good news.
I have a hard time accepting a universe in which there is no grief when something important to me is lost, in which there's no anger when injustice has been done.
Yeah, and I'm not
I would
saying...
not want to live in such a gutted universe.
Well, we're meant to be human. We're meant to have the human emotions that we have.
We are meant to have all of our human emotions. And I do not find that being present eliminates my emotion of anger when I go down my driveway and find that men have driven a huge truck over the goat's pasture, torn up the earth, and have destroyed the fence there.
Yeah, what being present does is it puts us in control of our reactions to those feelings so that they aren't destructive to ourselves and others.
Yes,
so
but it doesn't eliminate my anger.
Right, it doesn't eliminate
because
anger.
I am aware doesn't mean that I am some pushover who says, oh, well, gee, they just knocked down my fence. I guess that's the way it's meant to be.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. And that's a misunderstanding about spiritual teachings. A lot of people think that being present would put you in a very passive, detached state from life, but instead it puts you in a very alive, that's really what present is. You're very alive to what is going on, and there is a natural, wise response. You know, just like Jesus with the money changers, you know, there's an appropriate response, which might even be to overturn a table, but likely is going to be an action that will effectively make change in the world and not be destructive. And so, you know, this wise being that we are is also moves in the world to transform the world in ways that it needs transforming, and it knows how to do that in ways. So, it's not that the human feelings disappear, but we become a master of handling them so that they don't run us and we don't become, you know, bitter, angry people. You can have anger, but you don't become a bitter, angry person. That, you know, that would be very unhealthy for yourself. So
exactly. Resentment, mm-hmm. bitterness, revenge, those are not anger.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Anger is spontaneous.
Mm-hmm.
And it moves things, and then it's gone.
Yeah, so I think, see, I would maybe call that strength. When anger, the anger you're talking about is the anger that empowers us to act with strength and courage. And when our anger is transformed from being a negative force of violence and destruction, when it's transformed, it's a kind of a strength and a courage and a right action and a clear sense of knowing what to do. It's a strength. So
I will admit, however, that I take my lessons from nature. And I see nature being violent and destructive. And I see that as helpful, useful, and loving.
Well, it's natural for things to die or be destroyed and recreated.
So when I hear people putting these processes down, it makes me uneasy because I don't think of that as natural. Because what I see in the natural world, I see volcanoes, I see earthquakes, I see mudslides, I see tsunamis, I see hurricanes, I see cyclones, I see glaciers. The process is which this planet works are violent and destructive. Now, I am not saying that we should be mindlessly violent or mindlessly destructive, but I am saying that to my view, we should not throw these things away.
Well, I personally don't feel that violence has a place in creating a better world. But, you know, that's, we could agree.
When one of the baby goats,
disagree on that.
One of the baby goats gets too close to one of the adult goats, that adult goat is going to turn around and toss that baby goat. Now, anybody looking at that is going to call that violent. And yet, that is completely natural. It is completely present. But there is no bitterness and there is no revenge. It is a direct, immediate response to something that is happening at the time. How much more present could we be?
Well, it's
again,
just that.
And to my mind, what is happening here is that there are certain mental constructs that you have made, and some of those constructs go in the good pile and some go in the bad pile. And I will share with you the statement that my first Zen teacher gave me, and it has been my lifetime statement to understand what my Zen teacher meant when he said, the difference between good and bad is the sickness of the human mind.
I totally agree. Yeah.
And yet that's what you're just doing, is making a pile of good and a pile of bad, because being present actually requires us to accept everything.
Yeah, that's true. It does.
And once we start making a difference, difference between good and bad, positive and negative, we're no longer present because we're no longer accepting. We have moved right into, as you so beautifully, clearly, and succinctly put it, we've moved into the mindless mutterings of the brain.
Yeah.
Which are always saying, do this, do that, do this, do that. And are always telling us this is good and that is bad. Somebody said to me, I don't really understand what you're saying, Susan. Are you saying that I could just go out and have a cocaine hot fudge vodka sundae because there's nothing wrong and nothing right? I said, ah, you could indeed do that, but if you were listening to your body, you'd only do it once.
Yeah. Yeah, right? You know, the wisdom that we are knows how to act in each moment. And it, aligning with that will give you right action, whatever that might be.
Whatever.
And you know, maybe it would be overturning the money changers' tables. You know, maybe it would be that.
That's pretty violent.
It is that. That is a strong act, a strong statement, a strong statement.
Yeah. I always had to laugh when Jean Houston said, "Well, you know, the difference between Christianity and Buddhism is that in Buddhism you have an agony of ecstasy, and in Christianity you have an ecstasy of agony."
Okay. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. And again, it's that mind play between good and bad. Well, we have to acknowledge, I mean, hey, I grew up Catholic, you know? And the whole thing was like right there on the walls, and it was violent, and it was bloody, and it was cruel.
Yeah, that's what I couldn't take about being Catholic either. It was, are you saying that, you know, I just think that, you know, although there's a place for strong actions and something that you might call violent, that I think I might call assertive or strong, or you know, being protective or powerful, but an actual act that I would probably call violent, I think my definition of that would be something that did not reap the kind of results that that just would reap more violence and not actually be a result in the transformation that I would want to have happen from an act. So, you know, it wouldn't really come from that deeper place if it reaps more of, I mean, can we agree that causing other people pain or killing people is, you know, not something that would come from true nature. Causing people
so you're telling me that
really
the
harm
is,
really harm. I mean,
the
not,
is
I don't
not
mean
in its true nature when it swoops down and kills a salmon.
Well, we also kill animals to survive. So that's a purposefulness. I'm not arguing about that kind of thing. I don't think,
making a decision, which I agree with, about utility. And yet I must tell you that I have had minks come and kill my entire group of ducks without eating a single one. Would you say that that's unnatural?
We
can't.
We're not. I'm just speaking about human beings.
It's the nature of
men
to do
that. Yeah.
I'm just saying that when you actually look at nature and how nature, and I spend most of my time in nature and with natural things, and I find that nature is fully present moment to moment with everything that goes on and does not say killing is bad, compassion is good. Nature doesn't do that. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. But
the presence and naturalness is something that is scary because it does not have the social construct. And the social construct is there to protect us against the most dangerous animal on this planet, which is human beings.
Well, I don't think I don't think someone who's aligned with true nature is going to act in a way, they're not going to be a serial murderer or something like that. I mean, that's just not, that doesn't come from true nature. And so that, you know, when you say violence, I hear murder and mayhem. I don't hear killing. I don't think killing for to survive like animals do, or I don't even think you can compare animals to humans necessarily. So I guess you're coming at me from a place that I didn't expect, and I'm not used to speaking to. So I think we agree, but doesn't sound like we're agreeing very much.
I think we agree quite a lot. And we have been having such a good time because to me this is like very exciting intellectual explorations because you know a lot about what you're talking about. And so you have a real depth of knowledge that is very important to people. So before our hour is up, and it is almost up in the last 5 minutes here, I want to make sure that people know how to get in touch with Gina Lake. And that's www.radicalhappiness.com, RADICAL, radical, which means rooted, happiness, HAPPINESS, which means whoopee, radicalhappiness.com. Gina, can people find your books there at radicalhappiness.com?
There are free excerpts, and there are some free e-books that people have access to, and there are lots of audios and videos to watch. So there's a lot of free material. There's information about my books, links to Amazon and the different places that you can buy the books from. And so there's a lot to explore there.
All right. Thank you for being so generous in allowing excerpts and putting up audios and, really helping people. I can tell that that really, basically, we have the same goal, which is to see a happier, healthier population. We know that our health and our happiness is dependent on other people's health and happiness, and so out of enlightened self-interest, we want other people to be healthy and happy so we can be healthy and happy, too. Thank you very much. And 12 books, that's a lot of writing. I applaud you and putting out all of that work. Now, I'd like to give you the very last minute. What would you like to leave the listeners thinking about and feeling?
I think that I care most about helping people to find peace and love within themselves, because I think our world sorely needs that. So I am definitely working towards those values, and it's really possible for us, each individual, to become more peaceful and more loving and content and happy, and for our world to change as a result of that individual change. So if you'd like to understand more about how to move out of the limiting and generally negative self-talk that goes on in your head and become more aligned with your true nature and be in the present moment, then my writings can help you do that.
Thank you, Gina Lake, for helping us to reweave the healing cloak of the ancients. You are truly a woman who is making change, and we are delighted that you shared with us this evening. Green blessings,
everyone. Thanks, Susan. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.